On today's episode of The Good Word with Goodwill, we'll talk about which guys are headed into make or break seasons, the Knicks, or someone operating with the Knicks' interest. Tell everybody what they would trade for Joel Embiid, plus what was my first NBA jersey. All that and more on today's episode of The Good Word. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, and we are here, part of the Ball Don't Lie Network. We are also on YouTube. If you're watching me on YouTube, you can see that I'm not in my normal setting. I am in San Francisco for the season opener between the Phoenix Suns and the Golden State Warriors. By the time you hear this, that game will already have been over, and I will be headed to San Antonio to see Big Vic's debut. So, big week here at Yahoo Sports for the start of the season. We got producer John with us. And John, do you hear that sound? Do you hear that?
What's that sound?
Do you hear that noise? That start of the NBA season? Is that the NBC theme that I hear? Do you hear that? I feel like I hear that. Doesn't it feel like the first day of school, John? Doesn't it feel like the first day of school? You got your outfit laid out and you're just ready for the first game. And then load management creeps its ugly ass head in. How you doing? How you feeling today, man?
I'm good, man. Start of the season. We've been waiting all offseason for this day.
Yeah, except if you didn't have an offseason, it didn't matter, right? If you didn't have an offseason like me with, you know, no vacation, you know, no exotic excursion, nothing like that, then this is a reminder that you didn't take your vacation time. But I will take some vacation time. Just don't tell them. But, John, I prefer the CBS tune. You didn't hear that until this morning. Like, you didn't even know that that actually existed. So you grew up on the NBC tune, on the early TNT tune, right?
That's right. And actually, just to interrupt you, throw you off, I saw a thing on Twitter today. Someone was asking, what's the first NBA jersey you ever owned? And it turned into this long thread with everyone sharing their first NBA jersey they ever owned. And it's a really good way to identify like where your basketball watching started. So this is my question to you, Vinny. What's the first NBA jersey you ever owned?
Now, we weren't broke, but my mama wouldn't go out here buying no jerseys, right? So my first jersey came a little later. If I remember correctly, it was a blue champion, no, a red champion, Grant Hill jersey in maybe 1996. So it was before the teal era, right? I had a Grant Hill jersey that was literally like the opposite of the classic Pistons blue. It was like red with blue lettering. And then I had a blue Orlando Magic, no pinstripes, Penny Hardaway jersey. I got both of those jerseys around the same time, circa 1995, 96. I was like maybe in sixth grade. So yeah, those were the first two jerseys that I had, and I got them around the same time. What about you?
My family was also not flush with cash when I was a kid. So this was big for me. I think I picked it up at like a TJ Maxx. I had a Larry Johnson number 2 teal Charlotte Hornets pinstriped, and I was very, very proud of it. And then a couple months later, I lost it in a basketball game, or I thought I lost it in a basketball game. And then my dad went down to the courts and got it back for me. And I held on to that for a long, long time.
John, do you have a gambling habit that was started in your formative years?
That gambling habit lasted that one day and ended that one day.
John, were you Billy Hoyle and White Man Can't Jump? Were you just the guy that you, no matter how much you won, you were just going to bet, and then somebody said to you, "White man can't jump." Is that what happened?
If I was as good as Billy Hoyle, I probably would have kept gambling on my game. Yeah,
that was the crazy thing about that movie, was that he lost to his partner because he couldn't dunk. And all of a sudden, by the end of the movie, he out here catching lobs off one foot, two hands. That's how you know made for Disney. I have not seen the remake of White Man Can't Jump, and I don't want to see the remake of White Man Can't Jump. Some stuff just needs to be, you know, left alone. But anyway, with the start of the season, we always look for, shall we say, themes, right? The theme of this season, or one of the major themes of this season, this will be one of those make or break years for franchises, for players, for eras. Like, this could be an inflection point. We talked about it a little bit with Bomani on the last episode. If you didn't hear that one, go check that one out after you finish here. We talked a little bit about the changing of the guard, where you're going from these old guys hanging on and hanging on and hanging on to the younger guys taking it, right? Now, it would be a lot easier if Ja Morant were available. It'd be a lot easier if Zion Williamson were, you know, did some pushaways, right? Not pushups, pushaways, right? But for the moment, the old guys are still here. But for the purposes of this episode, we're going to focus on individual players who I believe are at an inflection point, either with their teams or their own individual careers. And we're going to start with the reigning MVP, Joel Embiid. I can't think, and I can name every MVP from the start of what I consider the modern NBA, which is 1984. And if you really queried me, I could probably go back into the mid-70s if I thought about it. Like, I know I could go to 1980, and I'm sure I can go back to 75 if you ask me. But the larger point is, you can't think of an MVP coming off of an MVP that was going into such a critical season where his standing in the league was going to be in question, his standing in the franchise, his franchise's standing with him is going into question, the way that Joel Embiid is with the Philadelphia 76ers. I'm not sure who I'd much rather be. I'm not sure if I'd much rather be Joel Embiid with the power of saying, get me out of here, because of everything that's going on with James Harden and all of the organizational upheaval. Harden wants out. He's quit his job. It's very much clear that he don't want to be there, and Daryl Morey does not have a handle on the situation. And you're not going to get a star back for James Harden. You're going to get maybe pieces back for James Harden that you are hoping that you can flip into a star. There's not an MVP in NBA history, especially in modern day NBA history, who has never made the conference finals. There's MVPs who got knocked out prior to the conference finals in their MVP season, but all of them, from Derrick Rose to Steve Nash to James Harden, all of the guys that you think of as one-offs, all those guys have gotten close to the NBA finals by at least making the conference finals. That's not the case for Joel Embiid. And a large reason why Joel Embiid has not made the conference finals is because of Joel Embiid. You can talk about James Harden, we can talk about Ben Simmons, but Joel Embiid's production, let's just say in the last 2 years, where Joel Embiid elevated himself to an MVP runner-up and an MVP, right? Where he gave Nikola Jokic a 40 ball and then ducked him on the back end of it. Okay, fine, right? Last 2 years, Joel Embiid, where he's averaging, you know, well over 30 a night, over 11 boards, or 12 boards, 4 assists, 32, 12, 4, MVP numbers. Go look at what he's done in the playoffs. 23, 10, not even 2.5 assists on 43% shooting last year. That was just last year, 43% shoot. I think the year before he was at 46, but this is a guy who's 7 feet, who's well over 7 feet tall and should be playing closer to the basket. Joel Embiid is at a point, especially when you consider when he was drafted and the injuries that he's had and the fact that we've marveled at the fact that he's been able to play 68, 66 games over the past couple of years. Like, we're not holding him to an 82-game standard because of where he started from with the knee and with the back. And we don't know how long his body is going to hold up. So then today, on Tuesday rather, there was a report that comes out from Keith Pompey, who is really, really plugged in with the Philadelphia 76ers. He's been there for years, been plugged in reporter for the Philly Inquirer. And of course, because of the CAA connection between Joel Embiid and Leon Rose, that was his first agent, and the Knicks get every CAA connection possible in the league. Every CAA guy from Donovan Mitchell to Joel Embiid and think of other guys in between, they're going to be linked because of the relationships with Leon Rose and World Wide West. So today, the Knicks Embiid connection came out. And here's what Keith Pompey said would be the offer from the Knicks to the 76ers? Julius Randle, RJ Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, Evan Fournier, and multiple first-round picks. That would seem to be a package that the Knicks would say, of course you'd give that up. You give up, you know, hey, Julius Randle.
I believe the offer is three of those four guys.
You're right. It's three of them. It's not all four. But let's just say for sake of the argument, it's at least Julius Randle and RJ Barrett, right? You know it's going to be probably Julius Randle. I can't see the Knicks not trading Julius Randle in the deal. I can't see the 76ers not asking for RJ Barrett, a two-way wing that still has room to grow. Mitchell Robinson, that's still an intriguing prospect for me to look at. And I'm not sure how much use he would have on the Knicks if the Knicks got a Joel Embiid. Maybe they flip him somewhere else. Maybe the 76ers will say, hey, we need a big to start in his stead, not named Paul Reed. Okay? So let's just assume that it's those three guys. Let's just assume. Plus multiple first round picks. Does that actually make the Knicks better? Are we sure that makes the Knicks better? And how long does it make the Knicks better would be my particular question. Now, if you're saying to me, and John could be very well saying to me, you know what? Jalen Brunson is a much better clutch player than James Harden or Ben Simmons. And you're absolutely right. He could handle taking the big shots. He could handle doing all the things that James Harden struggles with in the last 5 minutes of the game. Absolutely true. I would flip that and say, how long do we know that Joel Embiid is going to be great or is going to be at this particular level, at this level of MVP? We don't know. And if you're the Philadelphia 76ers, how do you measure how long Joel Embiid is going to be good in the context of James Harden, in the context of this very small championship window that may not actually be a championship window? I don't consider the 76ers. I've never considered the 76ers a championship contender. No matter what iteration they had, it just always felt like something was missing. And Joel Embiid raised his game in the regular season, but cannot sustain it in the playoffs. So to me, he is a huge, huge, huge question mark headed into this season. Health, trade rumors, how the 76ers handled the James Harden situation, his own belief and want to be in Philadelphia. I got questions about all that. Let's go to number two. Number two, Luka Doncic. Luka's numbers look excellent. They look great. 32-8-8. That 36% usage, that lack of defense. I got questions. I have huge questions. Not just necessarily Luka himself, but I'm very curious how Dallas will do this year. It's more of a Dallas and Luka question more than it is a Luka question for me. Because Dallas did not make the playoffs last year. They didn't even make the play-in. They were trying to keep their pick from going to the New York Knicks. So they tanked the last, you know, handful of games once they saw it was clear that they were trending downhill. And Luka Doncic is in this James Harden position where James Harden in his prime, where he was 36 usage, 39 usage, maybe I think a 42 or 43, an outlandish number. And for those who are unaware of what usage actually is, it's literally plays that end with you shooting or you passing that leads to the shot. And it sounds so very like simple. Oh yeah, maybe he got the shot or he got the assist. You know what that means? That also means that you're not being a threat when you don't have the ball, when you're not making the plays. It prevents other guys from cooking, and it also prevents you from making yourself a threat by moving without the ball, by letting other guys cook, and even doing something as simple as not dribbling the ball into dust for 20 seconds on the shot clock and driving your body to the ground. Part of what you're seeing with James Harden, in addition to a lot of other things, is all those years of high usage where your body can't sustain that night after night, 82 games a year, taking all those shots, taking all those hits, going to the foul line. Going to the foul line means there's contact. That means you're being fouled. You know what I mean? So for Luka Doncic, the numbers look gaudy, and Luka made level one. He was one of our bus drivers in our levels project that you guys should all go and check out at the Yahoo Sports website or the Yahoo Sports app. You guys should all check that out. He made he was one of those level one guys. And I got questions because as much as he and Kyrie cook, and Kyrie was excellent last year, Kyrie averaged like 27 or 28, I believe, on 51, 39, 95 splits. Really, really efficient basketball. Luka, really high usage. You know what that doesn't leave a lot of room for? Other guys to grow and expand their games. That leaves basically other guys there to defend and maybe be spot up shooters. And I'm not sure if that is a recipe. I could be wrong. Like John could strike me down with this. This could be used against me if the Dallas Mavericks become one of the surprise teams this season. And they win 50 games and they wind up going back to the Western Conference Finals where they were in 2022, beating the Phoenix Suns, dismantling the Phoenix Suns in a game seven on the road, beating them by 40, right? Remember how long ago that was, right? But for me, Luka's one of those guys where I'm very curious about his own individual future. I'm curious about how this situation works in Dallas. I'm curious about how long he can keep this up, because it shows that LeBron has to pare down a little bit. Even Michael Jordan, after some of those high usage years, had to scale it back a little bit. And that was the beauty of the triangle offense, where Michael was a threat when he didn't have the ball, where other guys could feel involved, other guys could move. Maybe the ball inevitably wound up in his hands, but the ball had life, as opposed to Luka just dribbling it. And Luka's a wizard with the ball. You want the ball in his hands. That's what, you know, modern analytics says is, hey, if a guy's really good with the ball, let's maximize it. But there's an element to that that wears things down, that wears guys down, and that basically says to the other three guys on the floor, sometimes you're useless. Just set screens and maybe spot up. Very curious how that works. With that said, number three on my list, and this isn't any number. This isn't like a, you know, one to five. It's just five guys. Trey DeBarge, Trey Young from the Atlanta Hawks. And he's a guy who's not as high of usage. He's not 36% usage like Luka. He's 34% usage. But his efficiency is nowhere. You would think that Trae Young would shoot like, you know, for all the Steph Curry comparisons and everything else when he came to the league and all the highlights that you see, you would think that Trae Young shot 40% from three or somewhere close to it. Shot 33% from three. Shot 43% from the field. That doesn't say to me that he can't shoot. That says to me that you maybe not necessarily you're taking the best shots. Because he, you know, that's why one reason he didn't make a lot of people's All-NBA teams last year, despite averaging like 27 and 10. You know, despite having total assists, leading the league in total assists, he plays a lot of games. He shows up every night. And, you know, he's a highlight. But can Quinn Snyder, and you've seen signs of it in the preseason, where he's moving off the ball a little bit more. And you can see there being allowed, that he's a threat off the ball. A guy who can shoot from the parking lot, you got to account for him. And sometimes he's much better without the ball than he is on the ball. That's the beauty of Steph Curry. And not saying that Trey is Steph Curry, but if that's an archetype of great shooter, smaller size, he can be a threat off the ball and be able to make plays without actually having to make the play. And I think that's something that's gotten lost largely in basketball as a whole. Not necessarily, I'm not blaming Trey for that. I'm just saying that there is a much better way for him to be used, in my opinion. And if the Atlanta Hawks, with Quinn Snyder, who came in last year in the middle of the year, as opposed to waiting, there's going to be some evaluation there. And a lot of people are high on Quinn Snyder as a coach. He always got more out of the Utah Jazz than people projected out of the Utah Jazz. He's regarded as one of the better coaches in the league. If that's the case, and there's going to be, you know, a battle of wills, if there's going to be a battle of wills, who's going to win out if it comes down to it? Is it going to be the franchise player or the franchise coach? Because unlike 2022 with the Dallas Mavericks, that 2021 Atlanta playoff run, where they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals and lost to the Bucks, feels like a long, long time ago. Okay? Long time ago. And here's another one. Number four on my list. Once again, not numbering them, just giving you guys numbers. Kawhi Leonard. Now, I'm going to bring producer John in here. John?
Yep.
Just guess for me, randomly guess, what Kawhi has averaged since coming to the Clippers. Not how many games, just guess the numbers, the averages. How many points, rebounds, assists? What do you think he's averaged since coming to the Clippers?
I'll throw out 24 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists.
You are really, really close. 25 points, 6.7 rebounds, 4.7 assists, 1.6 blocks, 1.6 steals, rather. 50, 40, 89. One of the most efficient players. Not even a borderline. He is a top 75 player. We're talking about one of the historic players when he plays. And he's now entering a contract year, essentially, with the Clippers. And depending on who you hear, either the Clippers decided, hey, let's just play this season out, or Kawhi said, hey, let's play this season out. You're the Clippers. You got this Intuit Dome, a fabulous facility that looks like it's going to be on the precipice of all things technology, right? In Inglewood, it's right next to SoFi. On the other side of SoFi, it's the old LA Forum. It's in Inglewood. They've done something really ambitious over there. I say that to say, you need to have a star in that building when you open up. But can you depend on Kawhi Leonard, who's only played, he's played 161 games for the Clippers. Take out the ACL year, but in those 3 years that he was in uniform for the Clippers, around 54 games a year. Not even 54 games a year. The Clippers are at the point of relevancy where they don't have to just take the scraps of whatever. And it's not even putting injuries on Kawhi, because if you're hurt, you're hurt. But if you're a franchise, you have to make long-term investments, especially with max contracts. Did y'all see the numbers that Giannis signed for yesterday or the day before? 3 years, $186 million. $60-plus million dollars a year. And remember, Anthony Davis signed for something similar where they're pretty much neck and neck in terms of average annual value, around $60 million. And Anthony Davis has had plenty of injury problems. So maybe the Clippers will say, you know what? That's the cost of doing business one way or the other. We are going to sign Kawhi Leonard at the end of this. If he proves that he is healthy, he is still reasonably young. Kawhi Leonard is only 32 years old, y'all. It maybe seems like he got a body like Fred Sanford, like he coming home to you, Elizabeth, but he's still 32 years old. And considering the old guys we got, where Kevin Durant is 35 and LeBron is, 78 years old, and they're still playing at a reasonably high level, some people would say it's fair to give Kawhi Leonard that sort of thrift. Fine. But the expectations for the Clippers, they've broken my heart so many times. I have sat up somewhere on different platforms or being guest on podcasts and saying, maybe this is the year that the Clippers put it together. You see Paul George, you see Kawhi, you see Ty Lue, who I think is one of the two best tacticians in the game, him and Eric Spoelstra. And you're saying sooner or later, they're going to do it sooner. Kawhi Leonard is 2-time finals MVP. We're going to see him put it together. We haven't. And at some point, we got to stop waiting on it. And at some point, we got to look at it and see it for what it is. And my last player, this ain't about numbers. This ain't about injuries, by and large. Ja Morant. Just get on the floor. And I know there wasn't necessarily a whole lot of meat to that ESPN story. There wasn't a whole lot of necessarily new information, new incidents. Ja Morant serving his 25-game suspension because he wanted to go chitty, chitty, bang, bang. Because it's clear that he has a world of issues. I'll just say this, man. Let's just hope that this is not an extended absence, another extended absence for Ja Morant, that this 25 games is the last that we see, because when he's on the floor, he's spellbinding. He's electrifying. I want to see Ja Morant try Victor Wembanyama. But the last image I got of Ja Morant, honestly, not even the suspension, not even him being on IG Live and everything else, where we weren't told. That's the funny part about all of this. Is we weren't told. There was no real investigative report, largely. The Washington Post thing about the incidents at the mall is one thing. But everything else that Ja Morant has done is because Ja Morant has told us. He decided to put a camera in his face, playing with the Harlem Knights gun on one, having a tool in his lap on the other one, you know, guzzling Casamigos and everything else on the other one, which there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with drinking tequila, mind you. But just in sum total, it doesn't look, it doesn't feel good. And you hope, we hope that there's not another incident around the corner, because so much of the future of the NBA, when you talk about youth being served, so much of the youth of the future of the NBA relies on guys like Ja Morant and Zion Williamson, who I do not have to name because everybody knows that he's in a make or break year for obvious reasons. And guys like Anthony Edwards, who we've heard nothing bad about, except the guy loves to play and loves to dunk on people. I am a member of Anthony Edwards' Hive, right? That's where Ja Morant should be. Ja Morant should be right up there with him. He just got to get on the floor and stay out of trouble. And there's no guarantee that that is actually going to happen. We don't have peace of mind that this is the final incident, that the lessons have been learned. Let's just hope they have. And that's the only thing that you can do, is hope that the lessons have been learned. Now, there's plenty of other stories to go along. John, give me that music again as we ride out, man. I need to hear that music one more time, because this is the start of the NBA season. This is a fun occasion. This is something fun that we need to be celebrating, because it only happens once a year. And then literally 2 months from now, we're going to be in the dog days of the year talking about who missing games. So let's have fun while we can have some fun. I'm Vincent Goodwill. That's John Gennaro. That's Evan and Ron behind the glass, helping us all with the videos that you see on YouTube, helping us with everything that you see on Instagram and social media. For everybody who helps put this together, I'm Vincent Goodwill. Don't forget Divine Intervention, No Cap Room, everything else on the Ball Don't Lie Network this week. A ton of content, a ton of things coming up. Next week, I got a fun guest that we're going to have on The Good Word with Goodwill. Check that out next Monday. Everybody, be safe. Everybody, enjoy the start of the NBA season.